Hi, this is Andrew Phillips. Thank you for downloading the Graymeer Church of Christ Sermon Podcast. If you have any questions or if you'd like to contact us, check out our website at graymeer.com. We'd also love for you to visit with us in a worship service. You're always welcome at the Graymeer Church of Christ.
Doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord and not to man, knowing that whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is a bondservant or is free.
Good morning. It's a blessing to be here with you this morning. I'm super excited to be up here and having the opportunity to preach to you, to get to talk to you, and to really have the chance to be up in front of you this morning. This summer has been a total blessing for me. I think back to the first day and the intimidation of coming into a new place and meeting all the new people, and almost immediately you accepted me, and I'm so thankful for that. I'm so thankful for everything that I've gotten to grow and learn in this summer. It's truly been a blessing to meet all of you today. If you want to go ahead and be turning to Genesis 39, we'll be beginning there this morning. Genesis 39. I know it's already been said, but welcome. Welcome. We're glad that you're here this morning. If you're visiting with us, we're very glad that you're here as well. You are an honored guest, and if you're looking for a church home in the area, we would love to be that home for you. And so be sure to stick around and let us get to know you a little bit better after service. What's led up in the story in Genesis 39 is we're going to see this idea, we're going to see Joseph, the story of Joseph here. And leading up to chapter 39, we've had, of course, Joseph's birth and this idea. He's had these dreams that he's had his brothers and father bow down to him. And he's also gone through the whole idea of the coat of many colors. Right? So this is where we are as we lead up to chapter 39. Also, what's happened is that day Joseph went out into the fields and his brothers saw him and they were angry and they hated him because he was the cocky little brother. Of course they were going to hate him. And so they decided, hey, let's get rid of him. So they tossed Joseph in a pit and then they were going to leave him to die. But then they see some slave traders coming and they see a cash opportunity, which for those of you in the business world, you know you always take advantage of a cash opportunity. And so they immediately decided, hey, we're going to sell him to these slave traders. And so they sell Joseph off, and he is on his way with these slave traders. And that's where we pick up the story in Genesis 39. And so we're going to start in verse 1 and then read through this a little bit. All right. It says, "Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites who had brought him there." All right, so we see Potiphar buy Joseph. Okay, now Potiphar was the captain of the guard, which means that Potiphar was the captain, he was the bodyguard, of Pharaoh. So he was in pretty close company with Pharaoh here. And when you think about being in close company with Pharaoh, when you think about the Egyptians, Pharaoh was essentially God to them. That's who they worshipped. That's who was everything. So here we see Joseph bought by really one of the men who was closest to one of the most powerful person in Egypt. And Joseph is bought as a slave, a nothing, a servant. So here we see Joseph. He goes from being the top of the line favorite son in a wealthy family to being a slave. Life for Joseph at this point probably isn't the greatest thing that there ever is. And then we get to verse 2, and it starts out, "The Lord was with Joseph." The Lord was with Joseph. This idea that the Lord is with Joseph is something that we're going to see repeated throughout this passage. It's so cool as you read through the story of Joseph, and we'll see some of it here in a moment, how it consistently keeps on saying, "The Lord was with Joseph. The Lord was with Joseph." And as I was reading through this, in preparation for this lesson, I suddenly started thinking, wait a minute. The Lord was with Joseph. No wonder he was doing great things. He had an unfair advantage. God had literally gone and said, "Yeah, Joseph, yeah, you're going to do great things for me. You're going to be the difference maker. You're going to be everything." And so I'm sitting there thinking, well, of course he's going to do great things. he was hand-selected by God to go on this mission. It's like a guarantee that he's going to do good things. You think about other people who are hand-chosen by God, people like Moses, people like Abraham, these people who do great things because they're hand-chosen by God. Then I got to thinking a little bit, and I thought to myself, how dare I use that as an excuse? How dare I sit there and think to myself that, hey, wait a minute, Joseph is chosen by God, so he's going to do great things. So I started looking into it a little bit. For the purpose sake, I want us to jump to 1 Samuel chapter 8. We're going to see another character in Scripture who is hand-chosen by God. 1 Samuel chapter 8. This is a time when the people of Israel have been going through all these judges, and they're getting to a point when they're getting a little bit flustered. Starting in verse 19, but the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel, and they said, no, but there shall be a king over us. Then we get to verse 22, and the Lord said to Samuel, obey their voice and make them a king. Samuel then said to the men of Israel, go every man into his city. And so we see the people here literally begging for God. They are angry that they're not like the other nations. And they say, no, we're tired of these judges. We're ready for a king. And so God says, all right, give them a king. And then we pick up in chapter 9, verse 1, there was a man of Benjamin whose name was Kish, the son of Abiel. Then we get to verse 2, and he had a son whose name was Saul, a handsome young man. There was not a man among the people of Israel more handsome than he. From his shoulders upward, he was taller than any of the people. And I wish we could read more of this, but for time's sake, we're going to have to jump ahead to verse 15. But what we see in between there is Saul is caring for his father's donkeys. So we see him caring for his donkeys. Then we get to verse 15. Now the day before Saul came, the Lord revealed to Samuel, tomorrow about this time, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin, and you shall appoint him to be prince over my people, Israel. He shall save my people from the hand of the Philistines. God goes and chooses this guy named Saul. God says, look, this guy named Saul, he is going to be the first king, and he is going to save the children of Israel from the Philistines. God had a plan, and so he chose this guy, Saul, to be something special. He chose him to take another step out and to do something for the Lord. And so God is with Saul to be over the entire kingdom of Israel. But I want us to skip ahead to chapter 15. And what I think we're going to, if you have heard this story before, you sort of probably know what's about to happen. You know where we're going with this. So we get ahead to chapter 15. And starting in verse 10, after a whole lot of stuff has gone down, a whole lot of intense things have happened. Verse 10 says, the word of the Lord came to Samuel. I regret that I have made Saul king, for he has turned back from following me and has not performed my commandments. That's a really abrupt, blunt statement from God. He regretted that he had made Saul king. Can you imagine any worse phrase than God saying something, I regret that I have chosen you about you? I personally cannot. And so as I sit there and read this, it's tough for us to realize that God, although he can choose us, although there are going to be times when he'll look at us and say, yes, I choose you to go in to do this, even though he chooses certain people, there are going to be times when those people that he chooses are going to fail. So when we look at the story of Joseph and think about, well, we could use that idea of the Lord is with him as an excuse, we can't even come close to that. See, the Lord has chosen a lot of us. As a matter of fact, he's chosen every single person in this room to go out. And so the last thing that we can do is, and as we're reading this story, is use this phrase as an excuse of saying, well, Joseph was hand-selected. He was specially prepped. The thing is, every single one of us were also chosen. And now we're at a crucial time where we're going to have to make the choice. Are we going to be the person that Saul was, or are we going to be the person that Joseph was? Are we going to be rejected, or are we going to be Joseph? Let's go back to the Joseph side really quickly. We just saw the Saul side. And now we're going to go back to the Joseph side of the story and finish up what he had to say. So Genesis 39, I should have had you hold your finger there. But we're going to go right back to it really quickly. Genesis 39, we're going to pick up back in verse 2. It says, "And the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight, and attended him, and made him an overseer of his house, and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him an overseer in his house, and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge. And because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food that he ate. Joseph was nothing. He was a slave. He was a servant. He was purchased from some slave traders that had come through Egypt by a top dog in the Egyptian court. And he suddenly does something that allows him to go from being a lowly slave, from being a nothing, to becoming everything in this household. He became everything in that household because he gave his all. Joseph didn't go into that house and sit there and let himself just be another slave. He did something that made Potiphar look at him and say, "Wait a minute, there's something different about this guy." Potiphar, a guy who sat there and believed that his Pharaoh was God, looked at Joseph and said, "There's something that's not of this earth about this guy. There's something that means that he is literally from God." And he recognized that. He recognized it because Joseph went into that slavery and went throughout his life with this mindset of, "I'm going to do everything I can to do it with all my heart. To go into this job and to give my all for everything that I'm doing." While keeping Joseph in mind, let's jump to Ephesians chapter 6. It was so well read for us just a moment ago, but it's so important, and I want us to read it again because it's a powerful passage. Ephesians chapter 6. We're going to start in verse 5. It says, "Bondservants, obey your earthly masters." Bondservants, obey your earthly masters. It starts out this segment of Scripture that to me is so powerful, and it starts out by addressing bondservants. Now, bondservants are slaves, and so at this time, there were many slaves who were a part of the church. And so, when this is being written, he's writing to slaves. This life of slavery was not a good one. It was one where they were forced to do work that they didn't want, where they were forced to serve people that they didn't want to serve, and it was just not a pleasant life. You were trapped in this household. Now, he's addressing the slaves. But what I want us to realize is that even though he addresses the slaves here, it still can address us today. Instead of looking at it and thinking, "Slaves, obey your masters," I want us to think about it as employees, obey your bosses. Students, obey your teachers. Citizens, obey your government. This verse doesn't just apply to slaves. It can apply to every single one of us in this room. He says, anybody who's in authority over you, anybody who has a place higher than you that can tell you what to do, what I want you to do, I want you to obey them. Here's the thing. I think that obedience is actually something that's probably pretty simple when you think about it. You know, there's a pretty direct consequence where if you disobey your boss at work, you're going to get fired. I can think about, you know, we had Horizons this summer. If I would have looked at JD and said, "Sorry, JD, I'm not going to Horizons. That's not me. That's 4th of July week. That's one of my favorite holidays. I want to go to the cookouts, and I want to shoot off fireworks, so forget Horizons." He would have looked at me, and instead of joking and saying, "You're fired," he would have actually fired me. That would have been a direct consequence of me disobeying my boss. And so really obeying is something that's probably pretty easy for us to do. But he doesn't stop at the obey, and this is where I think it really gets powerful. Let's keep reading. It says, "Bondservants, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, with a sincere heart as you would Christ, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with good will as to the Lord and not to man." He says, wait a second. I know you don't really want to obey your masters. I know we have times where we don't want to obey our bosses. We don't want to obey our teachers. We don't want to obey those who are giving us authority. But he says, guess what? You're going to obey, and you're going to do it in a way that is going and giving your whole heart into it. He says, it doesn't matter how awful your job is. It doesn't matter how much of a jerk your boss is or people are to you. It doesn't matter how you're being treated. He says, I want you to give your whole heart into it. I want you to give effort at work, give effort in your job, just like you're giving effort to Christ. It's exactly the same thing. It's a reflection of Christ. He never commands us to live a lazy lifestyle. As a matter of fact, it's the total opposite. Let's read verse 7 again. Rendering service with goodwill as to the Lord and not to man. There has to be a reason he calls us to be different. There has to be a reason. And as we read it and let it hit home, I think it makes a pretty clear point. When you think about this idea of going to work and giving your all or not giving your all, think about it like this. When you go to work and you sit there and you half-heartedly do your job, you maybe are lazy on it, you procrastinate on it, it takes a while to do it, and I understand all those things because I'm a college student and I do all that with my homework all the time. But all that stuff is this idea of, he says, wait a minute. What is the reflection that you're giving when you're doing that type of thing? What are you reflecting? He said, when you go into your jobs and you do it and you give your entire heart to me, when you give your full effort and respect your bosses like you would respect me, respect your coworkers, respect your fellow students like you would respect me, he said, there's going to be a difference that is made. There's going to be a difference where people look at you, and just like Potiphar said about Joseph, the Lord is with that guy. Those people are going to look at you and be able to say, the Lord is with that guy. When you go to work and you're lazy about the way you're doing your job and all that type of thing, when we do that, we're sending a message that we don't really care. I think one of the biggest mistakes that we make as Christians is allowing ourselves to think that our only service and our only time that we're fully devoting ourselves is in a church setting or when we're doing events with the church. The coolest thing is that when we go to work and we allow ourselves to work like He's commanded us in our jobs with all our hearts, we're reflecting this nature of Christ and indirectly telling every single person who is a co-worker there exactly how He lives, exactly who He is, exactly who our God is. How neat would it be, and imagine with me for a moment, if every Christian employee that's out there went to their jobs and said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give my all for my job in every single aspect of that job. And you go in and you do that, and so all these Christian employees are out in the world giving their all. And then bosses are going to see that. And so you go into a job interview, you're going out and looking for a job, and on your resume, you have the word Christian. And the person who you're seeking employment from looks at your resume, looks down at it, and says, wait a minute, it says right here, you're a Christian. Is that true? Yeah, it is true. Well, we have four other employees here who are Christians, and I'm telling you, they are the best workers we've ever had in our entire lives. They have made this company a better place by who they are. If you're a Christian, you get the job if you're just like they are. When God calls us to go into our jobs and give our all, it's going to end up in a culture where Christian employees are going to be like this, where Christian students are going to be known as the ones who are going to be the best behaved in class. They're going to be the ones who care the most and act the best. It shows the serving attitude of Christ in everything that we do. I'm not saying this morning that when we go into our jobs and we behave with this attitude and we give our all for Christ to our bosses and to everything that we're doing, that it's going to reflect in a pay raise, that it's going to reflect in promotion. We never see that reflected. As a matter of fact, when you look at the story of Joseph and think about who he was, it goes on to say that Joseph had some things happen where he was lied about and tossed into prison. Thing is Joseph went to prison and decided, hey, I'm going to do the exact same thing in prison that I did at Potiphar's house. And he gave his all in prison, and it raised him, and he rose and eventually became the head of the prison, which eventually allowed him to go in and become one of the leading officials in all of Egypt. He went from a lowly slave to becoming the second most powerful man in Egypt, because what he did was he gave his all for the Lord to his job. Joseph rose to the top by doing this. And like I said, I can't guarantee that we're going to rise to the top by doing that. What I can guarantee us this morning is that when we go into our lives and live with this attitude of, I'm going to give my all for the Lord in everything that I do, no matter what it is, no matter how miserable putting 10,000 numbers into that Excel spreadsheet is, I'm going to give my all to it. When we live that life, I can guarantee that we will one day rise to the top of heaven. What's verse 8 say in that Ephesians passage? Knowing that whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is a bondservant or is free. One day, if we choose to follow him and give our all to him, we will receive it back in the beautiful form of heaven. I encourage us this morning to be a Joseph and not to be a Saul. I encourage us to, when we have the opportunity, to take it. God has chosen every single one of us in this room. Think about how neat it would be if he wrote a story about your personal life to place in Scripture. And it started out because of the way you were living. The Lord was with. Put your name in there. How powerful would that be? My question to us this morning is, are we going to be the person like Saul who allows God to regret choosing us? Or are we going to be somebody who rises to heaven? Joseph gave his all no matter what he was doing, no matter the job that he had at hand, no matter the task that he had to do, no matter what he had to overcome, he gave himself all to it for the sake of the Lord. Maybe this morning you're not a Christian, but you've decided that you want to be a Christian, and you believe that Jesus exists with all your heart, and you believe that he's the Son of God, and you're ready to give your life to him. We would love to baptize you into Christ this morning. Or maybe you've been baptized and along the way things just haven't been going right. The way that you've been living maybe has not reflected the lifestyle of God, and you're sitting there thinking to yourself, maybe God regrets choosing me this morning. We'd love to pray for you about that. If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, please come as we stand and as we sing.